Intrepid Radio, this is Control. We are go for an on-air check.
Control, Intrepid. We copy an on-air check.
Intrepid, this is Control. You are go for Intrepid Radio. Cue music and cue talent. Intrepid, you are live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Intrepid Radio, you are live and the clock is running. You are listening to Intrepid Radio, where we spotlight innovators defining the new rules of marketing, business, politics, and life. And now, here's your host, Todd Schnick.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Intrepid Radio. I'm your host, Todd Schnick, joined today by a good friend of mine and a former guest on this show, the author of the new fiction book, Falling While Sitting Down. Welcome to Intrepid Radio, Joshua Milburn.
Hey, thanks a lot, Todd.
It's good to have you back. How's things been going?
Outstanding. Really great.
Well, we're here today to talk about your new book that just launched this week, Falling While Sitting Down. Tell us how the launch has gone.
I appreciate that, Todd. It's gone exceptionally well, way better than I thought. You know, this is, we've published some stuff before. We've got a really big audience online, and I'm really grateful for that. But this is the first time I've ever sort of dabbled in the publication of fiction. So for me, it was more of an experiment than anything else, and it's gone way better than I anticipated.
Well, I was watching you on Wednesday, the day of the launch, and keeping an eye on your tweets, kind of walking through how it was performing on Amazon and retweeting here and there where I could to try to help push things along. What was your take on that whole process? Could you tell if your efforts online were helpful in driving action and sales?
You know, I think it's a culmination of a bunch of things. I mean, for me, social media really helps out. I think it's a great tool if you utilize it with the people that you're engaged with. So yeah, I definitely think that helped. And as you mentioned on Wednesday, we saw the book go up to number 3 on, or in its category on Amazon, and that was really unexpected because the short stories category is something that's really hard to even get in the top, you know, 20 or 30. So getting to number 3, I didn't expect that at all, and I'm just really grateful. But I do think, yes, the social media, whether it was Facebook or Twitter or obviously our website at The Minimalists, really helped out with that and keeping people engaged as well.
Well, see, that's the point I want to make, because I think that a lot of people saw you active on Wednesday and subsequently since then and maybe attribute a lot of that success of the book to that hard work. It's one of those classic cases of, is this an overnight success? I think it goes back to the years and years you guys have been building that community around the minimalists.
Yeah, I think that's important. And for me, it's weird because I've always considered myself a fiction writer. I started writing fiction at age 22, and I'm 30 now, and so this is, you know, this first book has sort of been a long time coming. It's not like I worked on it for 8 years, but 4 of the stories that are in this book that I just published are in a novel that I've worked on for the last 2 years, and I can tell you I've never worked harder on anything in my life. Even in corporate America, when I was working 70, 80 hours a week, I've never really put as much blood, sweat, and tears into a project as I have this novel. So I feel really good about it, and it's great to see that it's paying off. But the reason I say it's weird is because anyone who knows my work online primarily knows me for, you know, the nonfiction essays that Ryan and I write over at TheMinimalist.com. So thankfully, we have a large audience there, and you're right. Over time, we've been able to establish that audience, and I think people identify with me, they identify with Ryan, and they're curious about some things that I'm passionate about. They can tell that I'm passionate about writing fiction, and that's always been my passion personally. So I think a lot of people are excited to see that come to fruition.
Well, tell me the difference between writing for the minimalists versus writing fiction. I mean, I imagine it's an entirely different creative process. Walk us through that.
Yeah, you know, I kind of have a weird analogy for that, I guess. For me, writing fiction is about 10 times harder than writing nonfiction, but it's about 100 times more satisfying when it's going well. I mean, and it's not always going well. In fact, 80% of the time, I would say it's incredibly difficult. Just trying to sort of tread through really thick waters of writing. But the other 20% of the time is it's amazing. It's the highest of highs, so to speak. And that's what makes the other 80% of grueling work sort of worth it. But if it's not working, it's about 1,000 times more frustrating as well. So to me, writing fiction is a lot different, but also I think it, more importantly, it nourishes a different side. For me, fiction is always about, it's really been about emotion, whereas nonfiction's more about intellect, like the intellectual side of things, dealing with real life. Whereas with fiction, it allows me to talk about things that cannot be talked about in nonfiction. It's a lot harder to talk about, you know, the meaning of life per se without doing so in a narrative or through stories. So I think having both the nonfiction side and doing essays and writing books in nonfiction and then doing the fiction side, it nurtures both sides. So you have the intellectual side, the emotional side, and I think it's I found a really nice balance with it.
Well, you know, it's fascinating to me because I too am working on a novel. Now, I am nowhere near as far along in my project as I'm sure you are, and I have a really great outline, but I'll be honest with you, writing fiction scares the hell out of me. but, you know, I published a blog post last night on my marketing blog, and I had the idea at 4:15, started writing at 4:17 and published at 4:50. It was a quick process once I had the idea and the notion of what I wanted to convey and got it done. I suspect writing fiction is a much more, well, maybe not for everybody, but I bet it is for most people, a much more deliberative process. Is that accurate?
I think that is accurate. Although I'd say that your process and my process are probably a lot different, even with nonfiction. I write and read really slow, and I read a lot, but I also I try to take it in, so I take it in really slowly. And I think because of that, my writing process is different as well. So even with nonfiction, it takes me a very long time. Like I posted an essay on our site this morning, but it took about 9 hours to write it, and it just takes me a much longer time. With fiction, it's even longer than that. So I mean, most days I spend anywhere from, I don't know, 5 to 10 hours writing. And thankfully, I'm really passionate about it. So even the times where it's grueling, it's worth it in the end. But it sounds to me like just my writing process in general is probably far different than most people's, fiction especially. It takes a very long time. The very first paragraph in my book is maybe half a page, and there's probably 30 hours of work in it.
Well, you know, it, you mentioned the post that you published this morning, and I did want to reference that. I was struck by it in this battle that I think you and I are similar on, and we both face is this notion of this perfectionism.
Yeah.
And it's a battle that I've overcome, certainly with my nonfiction / blog writing, in that I will never be perfect. But speak to that battle that I suspect many people face. And I think a lot of reasons that a lot of people don't create, however they create, whether it's painting or writing music or writing words, I think a lot of people are just afraid of, well, it's not going to be perfect. People are not going to like it, so I'm just not going to do it. What are some of the lessons you learned through coming to that realization about, and you told a pretty interesting story about perfection just in the book you just published this week. Talk to us a little bit more about that.
Sure. It's a strange thing, you know. For the longest time, I've written fiction since I was 22, and I remember working my corporate job. I had a really, you know, nice, so-called prestigious corporate job, and it was by all society's measurements a successful thing. So for the longest time, I never told anyone I was a writer. In fact, I just sort of wrote for myself, but I always had people tell me all the time, hey, you should really write something. And because, you know, they would just see emails or documents that I wrote and really just commented on that. So for the longest time, because I felt like my writing wasn't perfect, I never wanted to tell anyone, you know what, I'm a writer. That's what I want to do. That's my passion. That's what I'm passionate about. And recently this week when I published the book, you know, I was really excited. I've never worked harder on anything in my life. I'm really, really happy with the stories that are in Falling While Sitting Down. And I'm just really happy with the end result. I think they're great stories. I published it, and then I get an email that morning from a well-meaning reader. In fact, I got a couple, and there was like one small mistake. You know, I had this book edited by two people. I had 10 people proofread the thing, and there was one tiny mistake, and it just, you know, it sent me into this whirlwind of despair immediately, you know, because I have this feeling of, I thought this thing was perfect, and now it's really not perfect. And it was hard for me to grasp that at first. Oh my God, how could this happen? You know, but I got to think about it, and you know what? For me, it's a lesson learned. This thing is not perfect. I'm really happy with the process, though. I'm happy with the outcome of this thing, and it's not going to be perfect. And if I expect something to be perfect, it's never going to be.
Well, you referenced some classic books, ones that we all know and recognize, have mistakes too. You know, I mean, and you watch these shows on, say, you know, Behind the Music, where famous artists like the Beatles and U2 and Fleetwood Mac and all that, where they talk about, and they're reflecting on what we all recognize as a great piece of work, and they see flaws in it, you know. And so, I mean, I think that's, and also, and I gave a presentation this past weekend where I was talking about this notion of people being afraid to execute because of fear of negative reaction. And I said, it makes you human, and it makes you approachable, and it builds trust if people recognize that you're real and not some perfect specimen, I guess.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's certainly not a perfect book, but it's absolutely the best thing I could have done given the resources I had. I worked incredibly hard on it. The characters, it's strange. I feel like I know the characters in this book at this point. I've spent so much time with them. There are entire passages I could recite to you verbatim without even reading the page. So I spent a lot of time on it, and like I said, I'm incredibly happy with it. I don't think it's perfect, but I don't think anything I ever create will be perfect. I'm happier with it than anything else I've ever done, though.
Well, we've talked too much about process. Let's actually talk about the book. It's obviously a collection of short stories. Now, I will be perfectly honest with you, full disclosure, I have read your stories, but I have not read the guest contributions. So I think there's four short stories by you, and then there's three stories by some of your friends. One who's been a guest on this show, Colin Wright. Tell me about the messages in your stories. I mean, what is the theme? Finding meaning in our lives?
You know, hopefully, there was one reviewer who reviewed it, and I felt like he really got it. He talked about the mixture of hope and despair between the characters, and really, that's, if I were to sum it up, that's what I was going for, you know, because I think a lot of us feel despair, especially, you know, dealing with our generation. I'm kind of born, I was born at the cusp of Gen X, and Todd, I assume you're a Gen Xer as well. So for me, you know, there's this culture of mass consumption, but yet no one is happy, and we find that there isn't a lot of happiness in these things. And I write about that a lot in the nonfiction side, but it's harder to express those emotions. So I think my fiction is vastly different than any of the stuff that we write for the minimalists. But it's really about characters finding these emotions in themselves, whether they feel alone or they feel isolated, and trying to convey those emotions through the characters, and ultimately trying to find hope through the murky waters of despair.
Yeah, my favorite of the four that you wrote was "It's Also Quiet in Brooklyn," and I liked it because of that message. But I also liked it because I felt like I was on the journey. I could imagine riding on the plane with them. I could imagine riding on the subway, and the smells and the noises that you hear. I mean, it was just, that's why I just enjoyed that particular story. Do you have a favorite of the four?
It changes from time to time. You know, maybe the fourth story in there, it's called "The Loneliest Man in the World." That one I like, and ideally, you know, again, I like them all. I think the story you mentioned, the longest piece, "It's Also Quiet in Brooklyn." The idea there is to take Jody Grafton, who happens to be the main character there, and And ideally, maybe he is the character in all four stories. I think you'll find a lot more in the novel once that comes out. But Jody is a guy who I sort of set up because I wanted to give you a character you're supposed to hate. And ideally, you know, through that the first couple pages, hopefully I set it up so he was kind of an unlikable guy. But then over time, hopefully we'll find, you know, he's just kind of lost, and you'll find some hope in his future, and maybe he does become likable, even though you don't want to like him. And that was the hardest thing for me to do, was to take someone that I didn't really like that much and like him myself.
Well, you find yourself identifying with him.
Right.
All right. I'm not perfect. There's things I've done that I'm not proud of or happy with, but I'm searching for meaning, and I'm searching for hope in my future, you know, so identify with them. And I suspect most people who read that story are going to hopefully feel that same way.
Yeah, that's the idea there. Yeah, and I mean, the three stories after that are appreciably shorter, especially the second one. I mean, it's about two pages, if that. And, you know, it's, for me, if there's certainly not an ideology in this book, but if there's a theme in any of this, it's just trying to deal with a certain cultural ethos for this generation, whether it's Gen X or Gen Y or whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of people that feel lost and feel empty, and hopefully I was able to express some of those emotions in those stories.
Tell me about your three guest contributors, and what was it like working with those guys?
Well, I really like all three guys. I really respect what they do for whole litany of reasons, but Cullen Wright wrote one of the stories in there. It's called The Beam, and I really like that story. The main character is basically what should be an inanimate object, a ceiling beam, and it's a really good story. The ending is great, and it's a fairly short piece, and I was amazed sort of by the arc of it. It's a short story, but he's able to develop this character and have a really interesting plot twist towards the end. And then Chase Knight has a story in there, When I Open My Eyes, and I love that story, really, really love that story, and the character in there I could really identify with, and it takes place also in New York, and it was funny, and there was also that sense of hope, but then there's this sense of, I guess, anxiety between him and his girlfriend. There's this weird relationship that's going on. And the last story is by Mark Robertson, who we connected on the internet. He's an amazing writer. He's especially his nonfiction stuff. I'm really inspired by the amount that he puts out, the volume of stuff that he writes every day. He's an English teacher in Brazil right now, and is just a really amazing writer, and he wrote a really great story. I thought it was a great way to end the collection, sort of on a high note as well.
Did these stories just exist and they just gave them to you, or did they write them for this project, this specific project?
They wrote them for this specific project, although I sort of told them what the motif of the project was going to be, what it was about, what I was trying to convey. And they wrote around that. For Colin, I was really just pleasantly surprised that this is, I think, the first piece of fiction he ever wrote, and you couldn't tell because it was great. I mean, Colin's kind of a guy who's good at whatever he does. I mean, you've talked to him before.
Yeah, pisses me off.
I know, right? but yeah, I mean, you know, the first time I met him, yeah, I could just tell you sort of get that sense of this guy's really good at just about anything. That was the case with this. I read the story as soon as I got it, and I was blown away. And the same thing with Chase. I met Chase earlier this year down in Austin at a conference and at South by Southwest. And he kind of showed me around the city, and we talked a lot about fiction and what he was trying to write. And I was just looking for a way to help get him out there, because I think he's a great writer and I think he's really talented. So he wrote that for me, and I was just really, really pleased with that story. And then Mark is someone who I've known online. I've never actually met him personally, but we've interacted a lot, sent a lot of emails back and forth, had conversations together. He put the story together, and again, I thought It's called Up North, and I thought it was a great way to sort of end on a high note and sort of wrap up the story. It's kind of the only story in the whole thing that resolves in that way on a positive note.
Well, I look forward to reading those three this weekend, and I did again really enjoy your pieces. What's next, Joshua? I think you have a book coming out with Ryan soon, and then tell us a little more about your novel.
Yeah, we do have a book coming out next month. We just finished up some of the edits. I don't even know what draft we're on now, but it's been a lot of drafts. That's one thing about me, and then it helps having Ryan, because I write a lot of drafts. The stories that you see in that book, probably some of them went through about 30 drafts, and they're utterly different than what they started as. But we have a book called Minimalism, Live a Meaningful Life, which is coming out end of November or early December. Still working through that. And then the novel will be out next year. That still has a lot of tweaking. The stories are done. There's 21 different stories. I'm kind of inadvertently doing the Hemingway thing, where his first thing was a bunch of short stories that sort of came together for a larger narrative. That wasn't my initial intent. I tried to put together a big collection, but then I found it was just sort of all morphing together, and many of the characters were the same. So it's worked out to be a novel. There's 21 stories in that. I've edited a lot. It at one point was about 900 pages, but then I knew no one wanted to read 900 pages. So it's probably going to end up, 250 pages or so. That'll be spring, summer of next year. Once I'm able to labor through it, it's a really intense process.
Yeah, I bet it is. Well, continued success with Falling While Sitting Down. I encourage the audience to check it out. It's a very meaningful read. And we'll get you and Ryan back on the show in a month or two and talk about that book. And then we'll obviously reconvene next year when the novel comes out. Do me a favor, share with the audience how they can get in touch with you and find the Minimalist blog, and then most importantly, get their hands on this book.
Yeah, absolutely. The best way to get a hold of me, see anything that I write, I kind of make the minimalist.com. That's plural, by the way, theminimalists.com. That's sort of the hub for everything that I do. If you just want to see the books that I've written, you can go to joshuafieldsmilburn.com. And check that out as well. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, everything. All the information's there. Your best bet's just theminimalists.com. Drop me an email if you want. Say hi to me on Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Happy to hear from you.
All right, my friend. As always, it's a real pleasure to hang with you. Thanks for making some time.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, Todd.
All right, that wraps this episode. I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you next time on Intrepid Radio.